Hello, friends, and welcome to The Daily Good, a podcast filled with upbeat news, thoughts, music, and inspiration from all around the world. Good things are happening every day, but sometimes they're hard to find, so this podcast is a daily collection of the good stuff. It's important for us to stay active and aware of the concerns in the world around us, but it's also vital to give yourself time to reframe and refocus in your daily routine. And we could all use reminders of the good in the world and the great things that are happening everywhere, every day. So with that said, here's today's Daily Good. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Good podcast. My name is Peter, and happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the beginning of the weekend. It is the first full weekend of April, and that's always kind of fun for me, the first weekend of a new month. And isn't it startling that we are already in the fourth month of the year? I've said it a lot already this year, but I'm going to say it again. I can't believe how fast time is passing this year. Next month will already be my birthday. By the end of this month, my mother will celebrate her birthday. And by this time next month, my beautiful wife, Lauren, and I will be in Australia, teaching some dance weekends and classes and private lessons and seeing old friends and making some new friends. So there's a lot that's going to be going on in the next several weeks. But at least for right now, it's just a Friday. And we are getting ready to head into a weekend together. And I hope that you're in a really good place. I am going to take some time this afternoon and attend a memorial service for one of my beloved teachers, Miss Kimball, who was my sixth grade elementary school teacher. She passed away a few weeks ago, and she was very important to me in my life and in my development growing up. And so it's going to be an honor to go and see some old friends and share some memories of her today. And then, all weekend long, my big plan is to do as little as I can. Still trying to kind of catch up and recuperate, rest and rebalance myself after a very busy couple of months. And I'm hoping that this coming weekend will be several steps in that direction. So that's where I'm at. That's what I'm up to today. How are you doing? Just offering you that moment to pause and check in with yourself, see how you're feeling, see what your plans are for the weekend. Maybe you haven't even thought about it yet. Maybe this is the first time that you've had a moment to yourself to think about what you want to do this weekend. I don't know. Maybe you've already got all your plans laid out, and this is your moment to kind of look those plans over and make sure that those are still all things that you want to do. It's up to you. It's your time. It's your weekend. And I hope that by the time you come out of it and into next week, that it was everything that you wanted it to be. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. In fact, let's make sure that we're really, really focused on being here now. Let's all just pause for a moment and take a slow, deep breath in together. And then let it out again really slowly. And let's now get into today's podcast, this Friday podcast, with our first good news story, which is a fantastic good news story from the realm of medical advances, because there is a simple blood test that can help identify those at risk of dying from heart failure. Now, this is according to a study led by the University of Oxford in England, and participants whose blood contained high levels of a protein called neuropeptide Y. Those people were 50% more likely to die from a heart complication over 3 years than those with lower levels. Now, for a technical definition, heart failure is what happens when the heart can't pump blood around the body. And there is no actual cure, but treatments are available, including things like having an implantable cardioverter defibrillator fitted into the body. Professor Brian Williams, who's the chief scientific officer at the British Heart Foundation, said, quote, "As many as 1 million people in the UK have heart failure. Measuring neuropeptide Y levels could in future offer greater insights into how a patient's heart failure is likely to progress, in particular, whether those with high levels of neuropeptide Y would benefit from additional treatment to reduce their higher risk." Scientists are hoping that this test will be available within 5 years. Next, we come to The Good Word, the segment of the podcast where we turn to the power of great language to improve our lives every single day. Well, all this week, I have been delighted to share with you quotes and poetic excerpts from George Herbert, one of the great poets of the English language. And today, we wrap that theme up with just a very brief, very clever quote of his. "The best mirror is an old friend." What a delightful thought that is. I love that because I love spending time with old friends, people that I've known for many, many years, because as George Herbert says, it is a lovely way to sort of reflect on yourself. I'm a firm believer that we attract people to ourselves that are like ourselves. And so it's a good way to kind of take stock of yourself by not necessarily being introspective, but by looking at the people around us and deciding, is that who I want to be? Are the people around me the sort of people that I want to be as well? I certainly hope so. It's just worth thinking about. The best mirror is an old friend. George Herbert. That brings us next to Good to Know, the segment of the podcast where I try to dazzle you with fascinating facts and trivia on any subject I choose. Well, this week there was no particular overarching subject. It was just a random grab bag of some of my favorite trivia. And if you know me at all, you know that I love historical trivia in particular. So how about this? What do Juicy Fruit gum, an early version of Cracker Jack, and the Ferris wheel all have in common? They all made their debuts at the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. Good to know. So we come to our second good news story now, and this is a very, very impressive good news story about a major university, one of the world's great universities, the University of Cambridge in the UK, which has stopped accepting donations from fossil fuel groups. Now, this moratorium has been proposed by academics at the university amid concerns about the influence of big oil on academic research, and it comes on the heels of an independent report last year that recommended that the university halt funding from fossil fuel interests. This report found that oil and gas groups donated an average of 3.3 million pounds per year to the university over the previous 6 years. The student group Cambridge Climate Justice said in a statement, quote, "This is a huge deal for ending greenwashing, safeguarding research integrity, protecting academic freedom, and ending institutional support for an industry profiting from harm to people and the planet alike. This is a key step towards a permanent fossil-free research policy. That takes us next to Wonderful World, the segment of the podcast where we get to travel all over this big, beautiful planet of ours together, thanks to the marvels of modern technology. Well, all this week, we have been exploring the world and some of the great foods of the world alongside one of the patron saints of the podcast, Phil Rosenthal. And we've been doing that by way of revisiting his show I'll Have What Phil's Having, which was the original version that was then picked up by Netflix and turned into the hit show Somebody Feed Phil. Well, the original six episodes of I'll Have What Phil's Having are absolutely brilliant, and they're all available on YouTube, courtesy of PBS. So the one that I'm sharing with you today to wrap up our week-long theme is Phil's visit to Barcelona in Spain. It is an absolutely joyous episode, and it really opened my eyes to a city that I've never really considered spending time in before, but it's absolutely delightful. He visits a vermouth bar. He goes on a tapas crawl. He eats so much pork, it boggles the mind. And along the way, he, in his signature way, makes friends with so many people and is delighted by foods that he would never have had the opportunity to try otherwise. So as we wrap up our beautiful week spent with Phil Rosenthal, click on the link in the show notes for this segment of today's episode, and it'll take you over to YouTube, where you can spend about an hour exploring the incredible foods and culture of Barcelona, Spain, with Phil Rosenthal. That brings us to the rotating segment of the podcast. Every day of the week, this segment has a different theme. And on Fridays, we wrap up the week in good company. Well, speaking of Phil Rosenthal, we're going to spend our time today with an amazing interview that Phil did on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. It's a delightful interview because they get to talk about their shared admiration for the genius that was Johnny Carson. Stephen Colbert never got to meet Carson, but Phil Rosenthal got to actually have a lunch with him. And then towards the end of this interview, as is classic Phil behavior, he brings out a bottle of wine and some amazing food that he got right there in New York, where The Late Show is being filmed. It's kind of a delightful summation of everything that the guy is about. And there are even moments where he's able to talk about, you know, indirectly, of course, not in a heavy-handed sort of way, but he gets to talk about his philosophy of travel and why he believes it's so important to see the world and to eat with people. It's a great interview, and it's a great example of why he's one of the patron saints of this podcast. So click on the link in the show notes for this segment of today's episode, and head on over to YouTube, where you can spend a few minutes watching an interview with Phil Rosenthal on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. So we wrap up today's podcast with Sounds Good, where I get to talk to you about music and musicians that I love. And this means that we are coming to the end of our delightful week celebrating the life and music of Johann Sebastian Bach, whose birthday was way back on Sunday. And I have been delighted to share with you performances from the Netherlands Bach Society in this segment all week long. It's been a really fun ride, and we're wrapping things up today with, well, it's called the Oboe Concerto in F major. But here's the thing. It's a reconstruction, because in all of the recorded works that we have that have survived, that we know Bach wrote, there isn't a single actual oboe concerto that we know for sure was composed for that instrument. So rather than try to explain this to you myself, I'm going to quote directly from the Netherlands Bach Society here to explain this. Oboists did fairly well out of Bach, as his oeuvre contains more than 200 oboe solos. They often concern one or two oboes in opening choruses and arias in the cantatas, but the true solo repertoire is sparse. There is no music written just for oboe, analogous to the suites and partitas for violin, concerto, and flute. Neither is there any chamber music, suites or sonatas with basso continuo, let alone solo concertos for oboe. That's amazing when you think that the oboe was not an unusual instrument, and that Bach had excellent oboists at his disposal whenever he wanted. Here and there, we catch a glimpse of what an oboe concerto by Bach would have sounded like. For instance, Cantata BWV 156 opens with a sinfonia that would look quite at home as the slow movement of an oboe concerto. The same applies to the instrumental adagio in the Easter Oratorio, BWV 249, in which the solo instrument was originally an oboe before the role was given to flute in a later version. These hidden movements give us clues, and there are other indications that Bach did indeed compose oboe concertos whose manuscripts and parts have been lost over the years. For a complete oboe concerto, however, we have to rely on reconstructions. The concertos Bach wrote for one or more harpsichords and string instruments during his years in Leipzig are often thought to be arrangements of concertos he had written earlier for other solo instruments. But which instruments? Numerous suggestions have been made on the basis of transposing the works to various keys, judging how playable those keys are for different instruments, and seeing whether the lowest and highest notes are within the instrument's range. BWV 1053, which is the one that I'm sharing with you today, BWV 1053 appears to work best as a concerto for oboe d'amore in D major or, as in this case, an oboe concerto in F major. So, having said all of that, and I hope I didn't lose you there, click on the link in the show notes for this segment of today's episode, and it'll take you over to YouTube, where you can listen to and watch the Netherlands Bach Society's reconstruction of an oboe concerto by Bach in F major. And that's it for today's Daily Good. There are links to many of today's segments on the website at the-daily-good.com. Make sure to check out our Instagram account and Twitter feed to get more of the Daily Good every day. Our theme music, On the Sunny Side of the Street, was recorded by the brilliantly talented Jonathan Stout. Thank you again so much for joining me, and come back anytime you need a boost.